Good evening. Good evening, everyone. It is 7 o'clock. It's Wednesday night. And
we're here.
We're here, and actually, so are you. We've been taking for the last 5, 6, 7, or 8 years. Is Jenny Goss on yet? Nobody signed in yet.
Okay.
She's more or less to blame for a lot of this Wednesday night thing. And she got us started. I was down in Southern California visiting Coyote and staying in her little hut there on her property. And she said, we have to have a class on HVM. So we did it, started it. I think it was like 7 years ago, Ivan, 8 years ago. That's different than how many years ago was it?
Seven,
she's claiming, in her particular type of math. And we started it, but one thing that has been essential, clearly hasn't been essential, was necessarily the quality of the presenters.
What? What's that you're saying?
What has been achieved, however, is the discipline of doing it. And many, many, many years ago, before I moved out here, I was sitting in what did Lee Lazarek call a cafe, that thing, the midnight thing, Cafe of Doom or some damn thing.
I'll remember at the end of the class.
And so I was sitting, living there in Colorado, in Denver, and they invited me up to the Boulder Lazarek group for this midnight foray, and I was thinking of moving out here. I'd already decided to move out here. And I said to Lee Loswick, I said, you know what? I told him the story of how EJ wound up inviting me here. It was kind of an interesting story. And I said to Lee, I said, he wanted me to come out and be his accountant. And I said, Lee, look, I'm already doing accounting, so what does that mean? You know, and he goes, yeah, but you'll be doing accounting there. And then he said that the only thing that you're capable of doing at the moment, he actually didn't say it, he was a lot nicer than that, and he said is to keep working at it, to stay in the game. If nothing else, stay in the game. And that's one thing we can bring. Mm-hmm. There's not a measure of success like in the world, in this inner world that we're working in. It's a different, they have different calibrators. There's different instruments that are used to measure, different slide rules and measuring tape. And they start in a very difficult way because they start with each one of us is our own beginning, arbiter, where we stand in the work that we're doing. It stands on you. Is that Judy there?
Yeah, I'm right here.
I could tell, I could hear you somehow, even though you didn't say anything. But the point of it is that that's what we can do. We don't have to start with all these skill sets and this, that, and the other thing. Pat has been, we had a, do you remember when Ken and Tony were here and we did that, we did a special LRS on Sunday night at the Patty Show with Ken and Tony, and Lynn was there that night, and mm-hmm. Pat myself.
What is an LRS?
Labyrinth Reader Society, focused on American Book of the Dead.
Okay.
And we did that, and Ken and Tony had been with Lynn at the very genesis of when EJ was starting to pull together some of his teaching. They were foundational. And they looked at Pat, they've been very critical, very supportive, very extremely important to the genesis of it, as was mm-hmm. Lynn. And they look at Pat, who they met, of course, intimately after that, right after that, says, well, why are you still here 40 years later? Why are you here 40 years later? That's what we're doing tonight in Wednesday night So when I say it's Wednesday night at 7 o'clock, in a certain way I could be saying that anywhere.
Mm-hmm. And any time.
And at any time. Because as soon as you say it's Wednesday night, it's 7 o'clock, that's like this big skeleton key that goes in the door and goes click, the door opens, and we walk in.
Together.
And we walk in together. And that's really, Dan, and that's really, really what happens.
I just wanted to add to your story about Mr. Lee, or Lee saying what you can do is just hang in the game. And that's what Ichi has told us over the years, the same thing, is just getting staying in there, hanging in there. Don't split. Don't let your machine split. It really makes a difference to keep going.
We're not capable in a certain way of evaluating, really in a certain way of evaluating our progress. On the other hand, we are in a different way too. But I always thought, you know, like, here's a guy like Ludwig Beethoven, right? He's sitting there, he's cranking away at his desk, right, writing this stuff, and he gets it published, and then this big symphony starts, da-da-da-da, and people are blown away. And then the critics come later and they start saying, here's what we thought about it. It was all right. It was a little, and as one critic said, too many notes. And what are the names of those critics again?
Oh, gee. I don't think I
George?
Of course. Because they were just there. And it's our persistence in the game that we've chosen as a way of our own life that counts, and that's how we begin to measure. And this chapter coming up, chapter number two, is filled with a lot of that. And when I wrote an email that I sent out, I wanted to share the email because it took a different slant than the chapter two, but I couldn't help but write it. I wrote it late last night. I didn't send it till this morning for a number of reasons. And then I'll just go ahead, and this is reading then from the email I sent out. In our study of the book, The Invocation of Presence by E.J. Gold, we understand that the journey of development is done individually. Each of us makes our individual effort, and we're going to get into that tonight, one step at a time. We learn to cultivate a stance of aloneness. We cultivate a stance of aloneness. We assume the responsibility for our individual work, and we perform that work with each internal effort as we stretch toward the absolute. But this practice in aloneness is different than loneliness. Okay? It's fundamentally, a loneliness concept is in the world. We're not in the world. That doesn't mean that our efforts have to be made individually and privately and personally. We look for, we seek, and we find a circle of like-minded workers, and here they are, right? The need for co-workers is as great as the need for teachers.
That must be the cue for me to share the experience
yep.
that I'm having with my group members here, which... they're not on camera today, but Sunday at the Patty Show they will be. Over the last 40-plus years, there's been this work that EJ has produced for us around the death and dying, traveling through the bardos, the macro dimensions, however you want to name that, the principal text, of course, being the American Book of the Dead, which we have studied twice now, fortunately for us. And in our work together, we have produced many, many things. And when you have things, you have to be responsible for them, especially if they have to do with the teacher's teaching.
Very good.
So we have these things that are going to be placed into receptacles so they can be observed and appreciated and used and hopefully shared and passed on long after we're gone. But in order to do that collecting, I had to reach through time and space and bring my coworkers into the present. And today we were sitting around sort of recognizing the first moments that we mm-hmm. came in touch with EJ, and also that it is already an activity together that we've shared individually through the years and linked together like this. The reverberations of what we are able to do together have multiplied. Grant and I spent, I don't know, 15 minutes driving back from town, and we went 3 or 4 light years from here and came up with the fact that there's a fourth book that has to be written. And Kay and I were sitting there with the, I don't know, what was it, 15 boxes in the room that we need to get through and, you know, put away the Mary Craigie's special things that came off her altar when she died 22 years ago, and other various things of that nature. So the responsibilities extend through time, and they extend through space. And this chapter here about the journey, which is what it's called, assumes that you have some slight connection with your own travel through time and space into this moment here with all of us together right now.
We have the, and this is the theory behind of what we have to talk about on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
It's a whole other thing we'll get into. But the fundamental to our ability to work in this way means that we can see each other. I mean that with a big S, capital S, can actually see the other. And as you do your work in this way, an interesting thing happens, and you've had this experience in Florida when you were doing that selling experience.
Mm-hmm.
People see you. They don't know quite what they're seeing, but they know they're seeing something.
Mm-hmm.
And it's curious. It says to them, wow, I don't know who that is or what they're doing here, but I think I want to talk to her. So we emanate as we're able into the work, and these materials that are gathered, as I've said in some of these sunsets of the email, a written book completes itself when the reader is engaged. So the teacher, we were fortunate enough to have a live teacher that we understand near us, and he's presented a magnificent set of work for us to work with. He's presented it for us to work with. And that's the work we're doing here tonight. And I've got to read this little quote from Khalil Kobani, 18 years old in Hollywood, California, which is right about the time I ran into EJ the first time. I didn't lower than that. So here's the quote. And let your best be for your friend. If he must know the ebb of your tide, let him know its flood also. For what is your friend that you should seek him with hours to kill? Seek him always with hours to live. And that has been a watchword for me. I just refound it when I was thinking last night about this, how we work together in group, and we can work together in group. And I recalled this has been a watchword for me. When you're with your friend, you bring your best. You bring your best, you bring your game,
mm-hmm.
the best you can bring, because that's your best friend. And we can work in that way together. But it also requires, my friend requires me to work in this manner of aloneness. There's a certain trust that when I get up and I leave the table of our gathering, that I'm going to go and put on the work suit,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, have my
mm-hmm.
shovel and my
trowel,
and I'm going to be working on building that wall a little more solid. because then we can work with it together, right?
You rely on, as much as your own efforts, in a certain way, you rely on the efforts of others. It's not a requirement. It's what develops as you have a work relationship. That's how it works. So when I call Ivan and say, you know that Labyrinth Reader's course you need for those Detroit monks? Do you have the camera ready? Do you have the camera ready? Do you know where the camera ready is? Can we get this out today? Okay, so, you know, that trust that if there's an agreement about the work that you've agreed to share and to promote, that you can rely on the other person to give you their best. They'll give you your best, and you give your best back, and then you move forward with that. That's a very tricky arena. So
it is a tricky arena, and I'm not quite sure why we're off on this, but it's so important right now. And I'm going to share something a little personal.
Well,
about
you go
you.
Right ahead. Oh, about me. Okay. Okay. You go right ahead.
About my relationship.
Of
and
course.
When you've been down the road a little bit, it's okay because I know absolutely that Pat understands I am not that. That this just things happen. This is several, I don't know, weeks, months ago or something like that. Pat had been taking on this role with her family up in Chico. And sometimes that's a burden. I mean, that's a lot of work. And she drives all up there, and then she drives back to get her in time for the class on Wednesday night. And she was frazzled. And she was tough to be with. I mean, really, really hard. But guess what? I knew that the second she sniffed the invocation of what would happen, I knew it. As certain as the sun comes up in the morning, I knew that would occur. Because she's put in the effort. So when I saw that, I went, okay, so what? Because that's not what was important. And that's the focus of this particular volume that EJ has given us. He's trying to tell us over and over again that there's an external world and there's an internal world. And the magic in this particular volume is that you must interact with the outer world. She must do that task as I must do certain tasks that I've just been with our lovely friend Jana for the last 2 weeks. I didn't do it because I like doing it. I had to do it because I'm capable of doing it.
Exactly.
Okay? Check it out. So I'm interfacing with the extra outside world, but I didn't become it. So I wasn't dragged into the identification of what it was because I had the practice that is indicated in this particular volume right here that says, okay, so we remember the whole thing with the bow and arrow, right?
Mm-hmm.
Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And where he describes it. And then he says, okay, you let go of the arrow, and there goes the arrow. That's the external world manifesting Maya. Start coming into manifestation. But you don't let go of your presence. So when you're talking and you're describing the camera, can you be describing it, looking at it, doing the and not let go of that at the same time? I have absolute evidence that, yes, you can do that.
David, I'd like to make a comment.
Judy.
Yeah, this is...
Good evening.
Hi.
Good to hear your voice. You're back from the deep east down to Florida?
Oh, that was a really strange weekend. Anyway, we'll skip that. We'll talk about being in Maya. I had a very good 3 days of it. Anyway, this conversation and the bow and arrow, and I look at the whole thing, and it has to do with conscience and responsibility. And
again, repeat that last.
And responsibility is a word that is something that a lot of people don't like. So attending to one's responsibility based on higher conscience and not losing yourself in that world where you need
hang
to
on,
be
hang
responsible.
On. There you go.
Now we got it. Thank you.
We needed a different mic or a different speaker. We have it now. Go back to responsibility.
Okay, so we're responsible because there is such a thing as right action, and we don't lose ourselves in that world where we need to be responsible. We do it because, like you say, number one, we can, and number two, because we have conscience, and we have responsibility towards friends and family. And this group.
Yeah. Gradually.
You can bring that into. I mean, I don't know any of these people. Okay. I only know you. We've had phone conversations. I've spoken to Pat once or twice on the phone. I really don't know Ivan. You know. But I'm saying that there's a responsibility that I've taken on. Because I want to be part of this group, and this is an important thing. You know, if any of these people, I don't know who Lost Horizon is in Muscle Spark in Molly Midway, but if any of these people called me to talk to me about anything, about what was going on here, wanted to have a conversation, you know, I would immediately step up to that because I've made a commitment to this group.
You know,
I want to just respond to one thing that you're saying, Judy, and it's exactly right that the recognition to each other about each other in this way, even though we don't know each other, we're not familiar, we don't have experience together, etc., all of the normal things that declare a connection in the external world are exactly those things that we can set aside and say, and in spite of any of that, that's of no importance. What is of importance is our shared recognition of similar responsibility and agreed commitment. That's, you know, that's a huge issue to be sharing with, quote, a stranger. And that's the quality that is so intangible and dynamically necessary here, is our invoking of our presence requires a commitment of our own and an acknowledgement by others in order for it to be the dominant dynamic of our activity together.
Of our interaction.
Of our shared activity. Yeah.
You know, I look at...
I appreciate what you said, Judy, very much. I really, really do. That's very important.
You to know, I feel that even though I've never met any of you, and I probably will someday, but if I contacted any of you and said, hey, I'm coming to Grass Valley, where can I stay? It's like I know that everything would be taken care of. I mean, I can't explain it. There's just a sense of belonging, and it doesn't matter that I haven't met you yet.
Judy, I didn't quite hear that. Did you? Where was the date that you said you were coming up?
I didn't say a date.
We're having a lot of
problems here with the breaking up.
You have to forgive us. Our microphones, our mouths, and our metallic devices are all interacting.
Okay, well, we can just skip to whatever, you know, is on the next of the agenda.
Thank you.
So one of the things that, okay, let's just keep reading. So actually, then in the email, I quote from the book.
Yes.
Where did I quote from there? Here we go.
Yeah. Okay, right
tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so now we're on page 8 in the English edition. Do you have your Spanish here too? Okay, so it's chapter 2, capítulo 2, or la...
39,
el viaje in the...
Paragrafo.
The paragraph 4. Okay. Okay. Mañana. Tomorrow. All day and for the next several days, with all your force, invoke the presence of your presence into the present. No matter in what circumstances you may happen to momentarily find yourself. Now here's, this next thing is really critical. Remember to sense, and that's where you inspired me or something you said. Not just ordinary, place ordinary intention on. You're in sense, your invoked presence. Reverberate the sensation in your solar plexus continually. Harry, are you there? I don't think Harry made it tonight. But boy, I was just wondering, what the heck? What does that mean? Hand Tamara the phone. She just wanted to say something.
Can I answer that question, Dave?
No, we're not yet. Hang on. Hang on. Tamara's just itching to talk here.
I didn't know I was, but I guess David sensed my intention. You know, for me, the word sense, and it's italicized in the text, means to drop out of the brain into the body. And just by dropping that beta brain, the body awakens. So his use of sense, I think, is very important. And we also have a Tai Chi physical therapist here, and I'm going to pass the phone to him to talk about why it's important that the sensation is in the solar plexus.
Double whammy. Go for it. Grant.
This is Grant.
Hello. I was just going to say that I think it's to drop it out of the head brain into the lower centers, and you know, give us a way of doing that by focusing on a different point and a very important point.
Now, hand it back to Dan. Well, hang on. See, we know what he means when he says,
yes,
don't just place your attention.
Yes.
Right, like, you know, like, oh, I'm going to really focus on that then. That's, you're talking about something else here. I still don't know what you mean by what you just said.
Let's use the word sense as the type of perception. So in the body, we seem to say that we have these five senses.
Okay.
And those five senses have specific organs of the body that they're related to, and certain information centers in the brain where that organ is perceived. Sense, without a specific, as in hearing, the sense of hearing, or the sense of touch, or the sense of smell, or the sense of sight, without a specific, definitive, detailed name of the sense, it is without a single part of the body, but all. So sense is either combined of all or above all of the, quote, senses, which are the physicality of the body. But this word sense actually has three or four additional meanings, which is, sense is sometimes used to say, let's make sense of something, let's figure it out. But it's not with your mind, it's not with your brain. So to get a sense of something, implying that there is something to know, but not with your brain.
Well, I want to come back to that part of your definition,
yes,
where it says, to get a sense of something in a minute. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Very interesting.
To me, a sensing is also like no interpretation. It's the idea of when you are in your body, like through the senses, but you are not aware of, oh, this is an itch and it's because something is happening, or I have this feeling and it's because I'm sad. Not giving any interpretation to actually what you are experiencing, but just observing what is going on. Because when you start interpreting, then it starts becoming an idea, more something that is in your brain. When you are in your body, the idea is to actually just observe that and like sense it through the different organs. But there's no interpretation. That to me is kind of like a clue sometimes to understand the sensing.
Okay. But before you give up the phone, in the Spanish edition, how is that sentence translated?
Which word is used?
The whole paragraph?
No.
The word defensar?
Remember to sense.
Acordaos defensar.
Yeah.
Acordaos defensar. Yeah.
So.
It's a long conversation.
There's a whole. We had tons of conversations with all these translators about the word sensing.
Yes.
And it's like in Spanish, it's not. There's nothing unique about it.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting conversation to have because look how we're doing.
Yeah.
Okay. Anybody else want to take a swing at that ball?
Ivan, are you up on there?
Yeah.
See, the poet knows that it's not worth talking about because it's not about words.
Well, I have to agree with everything that I've heard here. Yeah, it's about getting out of your head. I mean, you know, speaking of art, speaking of the arts and poetry, I mean, this is what you do. You get nothing but a mechanical result if you go from, okay, you know, my neck is stiff or I'm feeling my solar plexus, and now I start expressing that or formulating it or dancing or painting. It's like if you wanted to get a poem out of it or to get something creative, you have to go further into it. So what you do is you go in and in and in to the sensing, to the specific.
Do you remember the name of the jazz artist that we've talked about in the past? Starts with a B, I believe his name. I learned about him when I was in New York at those jazz things, and I was talking to a professor from Columbia University, and one of the famous jazz artists at the time actually wrote in his material, he said, "My art isn't complete until the viewer sees it." No. This is a painter.
A painter. Okay.
A painter who's very well known in the jazz, like as a jazz art, and my painting isn't completed till the viewer sees it. Then there's the slight difference in the text is, you know, when you sense something, I've got a sense of this, you know, I sense, what does that mean? What do we mean when we say, I have a sense of what you're talking about? There's actually, so what EJ is inviting us to do here over and over and over again in this literature is to stop thinking about it and use a different organ, and you can create something, and you do create something by utilizing that organ. Judy.
Yeah, what I wanted to say about this is there is an actual slight vibration that actually does go through the body that he's trying to get us in touch with. And Gurdjieff gives an exercise exactly like this where he says to feel the vibration in the heart center. So really we want to move up from the solar plexus to the heart center. But this is a real thing. And he says if you can't sense it, imagine it. It's called constructive imagination, and eventually you will feel it. So that's just an aside.
A little bit closer. Next time you speak, a little bit closer to your mic. There's another and these are all right on. It's a vibratory sensation. It's a vibratory sensation, and we had said it a few weeks ago. We navigate toward it by mood, not emotion, by a certain form of mood. That's why doing this exercise over and over, you doing the exercise over, not me, you doing it over and over again, because yours is very particular to you. You're a specific drop of the absolute and eternality. And the divine has said, okay, here, bing. And every time you do this, you have a chance to like touch it just a little bit. We don't have the balls yet to just grab it, but all right. We're getting there though, right? We're making a little bit of progress. We're allowing ourselves to stay there longer and longer and longer.
Well, Sunday night, for the third week in a row, I read from the orchid which blooms only when the moon is full, from The Great Adventure, which is a series of talks on death and dying. And it talks in that chapter about this concept that the planet is magma with a scab over it. And that similarly, the human organism has this leathery skin, which in effect is a scab, over the magma, which has been compressed into this smallest of golden apples of the sun, otherwise known as...
This is our essential being.
There you go.
That is... We are, and Judy was telling us about responsibility a couple minutes ago. After you start to discover that this is within you, and then every once in a while you get a little sniff of where did this damn thing come from, and you start to go, oh my God.
Yes, and conscience, what she was saying earlier, the aspect of conscience and responsibility, you can be conscientious toward this sense of your invoked presence. And then the second sentence says, reverberate this sensation.
Okay.
That's a deliberate activity. Reverberate this sensation in your solar plexus continually. This is an almighty, incredible task. Because first you have to agree to be perceptive and invoke your presence. And then secondly, you have to agree to pay attention with all your force to it all the time.
Right there.
And thirdly, you have to reverberate the sensation of that in your solar plexus continually. Huge, huge deal. It's like Sisyphus pushing that rock up the hill, right? Isn't that correct? It's the same magnitude of effort required. It is not a little thing. And what Judy was saying about conscience, this is a good clue. Conscience is a clue because conscience indicates the way to go. We call the ethic.
Yeah. It's an inner ethic. That is determined by a vibratory sensation. And you know right away, you know how to navigate. You'll know how to navigate. And this is later on when we start talking more about being voyagers, proper voyagers. You learn to navigate. It takes a while, but you do. You really, really, really do.
David?
Judy?
Yes? Can you hear me?
Go.
Yes, thank you. That's much better. Thank you.
Okay. I know that we're going to get to a point of discussing this 936 or the three shock points or the three brains or whatever you want to call them. But the reason that the solar plexus is important is because that is where the reconciling comes in when we have an affirming and a denying in the body. And know that spread out from the solar plexus, those localizations are the holy reconciling.
And this is why last week we were, and maybe it was the week before also, and Carrie was here, we were talking about the prayer of the heart, which rises out of the Eastern Orthodox tradition and the Desert Fathers. And that's exactly, they're much more direct about it. You know, they just say, here it is. That's what you're supposed to do. It's just almost verbatim when they talk about the Jesus prayer, saying it over and over again. I was at, this is a not Eastern Orthodox, but I was visiting this Cistercian monastery down near Big Sur 30 or 40 years ago, and it was an hermetic monastery, which means that the monks, they're not out there doing stuff. And there was just the one guy at the bookstore in case somebody came. And so I came up there, it was me and my buddy, we came up there, and it was like, I said, is it okay if we look around? He said, sure it is. And so then we're walking around and stuff, not a soul, nobody, just this guy. Mm. And they had their church, whatever you want to call it, their chapel, I guess is what you'd call it, was in the round. And it had, the seats were like in an amphitheater, you know, they go down toward where the celebratory moment was. Mm-hmm. There wasn't an altar. All there was a skylight with the sun coming through and a very simple cross hanging in the middle of the space. There was nothing else there. Windows and these little steps, right? Down to the, and then like a theater in the round almost, right? That's all there was in there. But when I walked in there, there was the profound sense of the prayer they had been doing over and over. They had painted the walls with it. And even the guy who I was with, who was a mathematician, commented on it, which was unusual. So this is another world that is there, it exists, and we can access it. When we're with our friends, we can access it more readily, as Gibran is telling us, you bring your best. That's what he means. You bring your highest and your best when we're together, because it's worth it. Because you got a golden friend with you at that moment. And then it allows them to be there as well. So then, at the end of this email that I wrote, Pat, at the very end of it, what did I write again, Tamara? So let's say you're out there floating around doing whatever the heck you do, and you run into somebody, and you just get the feeling that you want to tell them about this exercise. I don't know if it was EJ. I think it was EJ. Maybe it was somebody else that at one point said, you should be able to get it to work so well that you can explain it to any truck driver.
In a bar in 5 minutes
to any truck driver. Okay, so you're up now. So here you are. I know a lot of you, I look around the room here, I've spent a fair amount of time in bars, I can see. And
with truck drivers.
With truck drivers, too.
I never had any drunken truck drivers ever ask me if I would please give them the secret to the exercise invocation of I must have misheard that.
I don't think you throw pearls before swine. I must disagree with you, David.
No, I'm not talking about anybody.
Nope, we're not.
Not just anybody, but sometimes things occur where someone winds up figuratively at your doorstep. Like Remember when you were doing that selling thing with that shot lady in the shop, and in a certain way she couldn't stop talking to you? I mean, she just needed to be next to him talking about Kay and some work she was doing in selling down in Florida. And she just met somebody. And it was clear that they were speaking to her, not because they were the shop owner, but maybe it was part of it, but there was something unusual. So our sensing should tell us when someone is coming in that regard. Okay? That's what I mean. Not just, not anybody, anybody, anybody. And we've all had that experience. And so as you do this kind of work on yourself, also think like, gosh, when that angel comes to you in front of you at that moment, what then?
Well, I refer to my own experience of that nature because, you know, it's unfortunate. I have several of those experiences that I recall.
Yes.
But the specific one that I'm thinking of right now was a university, first year, I think, university experience where I was in a car with a person who was semi-friend, and I just got awake for some reason, okay? And that experience was so unusual to me that I wanted to communicate it to the other person. And I said, you know, like, can you imagine that you're out of space, not in your body, but floating above the earth, and you hear your mother's voice? You can hear your mother calling you. That's
great
what
answer.
That felt like to
Good
me.
To you.
So a way to communicate it was something that I believe is, you know, not necessarily everybody has it, but most of us have the recollection of the sound of our mother calling our name. And if you don't have that, you have something that's like that. And that is so deep in there that you cannot forget it. You always have it. So what is that when it's not your mother? What is that experience when you hear that? That's what I used as my model, and, you know, that was good enough to give this person a sense of what I was talking about. But there's only an experience for me, the only experience that you can actually share with somebody about how something might be true for you or not. And I was going to say, if you wouldn't mind offering a little bit from your own experience of that day with that sale and that person, how did they happen to have that conversation with you? What was it that drew that up? Because I've heard you speak about this before, and I think it's relevant. So if you have to take the phone in your hand, because the other people won't be able to hear you. Well, you have to tell us directly. Just like this. Yeah.
Well, I'd rather tell about a more current one.
Good.
Two things happened recently. I was on a plane. I was on a plane coming here, actually going to Wyoming, and there was a lady sitting next to me.
I think you need to hold it closer to
Do I hold it?
No, just hold it. Well, because otherwise, it hits that mic.
Oh, is that good?
Yeah.
And she.
Oh, no.
No, that's not going to work.
I don't know. Maybe hold it this way. No. The other way. Yeah. Try that.
How's that?
Yeah.
Okay.
That
and she sat next to me, and she was doing some, you know, the little, I don't know what they're called, but they're drawings, and you color inside them. It's something they're doing now, and she was having trouble with shading, and so I said to her, I had this exercise that I remember EJ had talked about, and the only thing we really talked about during that time period, I explained to her about
looking at going out at 9 o'clock in the morning, looking at a tree, seeing which way the shade goes, noon doing the same thing and making a drawing of the tree, and then also at 5 o'clock, and he gave this a while ago. Anyway, I couldn't believe that was our only communication, but I had the feeling that was going to help her to get her on her way of drawing. It was very weird. It just popped into my mind to do that. And that's what happens a lot of time. I don't really think of the things, they just come. And I think it's the same thing with working with, you know, our solar plexus. It's almost that if you, like you were saying, think about it, you don't have to think about it. It there's something that just develops it itself. I don't know. I've had the experience of my feeling that solar plexus energy, and sometimes I don't even know how I'm or why I'm feeling it, but it's there, and then it's there and you work with it. So that's basically it.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Cameron.
Yeah. Well, this is sort of just a follow-up to Kay's use of the word knowing. To me, having worked in the clinical field for years, the thing that people want more than anything else is to be known. And one of the gifts that I've experienced in my relationship to EJ and watching him with other people is he knows you. You know, the first time you meet him, you're known. And that is something that can be developed. One of the practical exercises is through the contact exercise. And that's one tool that I've used over and over, both personally and professionally. So when Kay talks about, you know, the right thing popping into mind, or that knowing, that comes from that deep connecting to that other person. Like when David talks about, you know, you stand in front of a piece of art and you're connected. And when Judy talks about, I may not have seen you all in person, and yet you are known to me, it's very deep, and it transcends our humanness.
So part of our work is to work with this, developing the presence and starting to open the solar plexus just a little bit so it's available to us. In time, we'll move from that position. We'll act, in a sense, from that position. We won't act from knowing. In the normal sense, we'll move as is appropriate. And in certain spaces, when you're working in certain spaces, that's the only tool you have to know what to do. You have no other tools, because no one's ever done it before. And every one of those spaces is absolutely unique. And that's what you can rely on.
And there's this section of this sensing, which is that the sensitivity that is required to participate in that manner, that's the developing that you're doing. It's you're increasing the sensitivity. The sensing itself is the organism, the sensitivity and the receptivity you have to what you were talking about, just having it come to you, you know, having it be there. That kind of thing, that's what you practice when you're experiencing that invocation of presence into the present. Because it feeds back to itself, it delivers the energy and the mm-hmm. mood and the tolerance, because it is high energy. So you have this growth that occurs because you're allowing the receptivity from experiencing that to go a little further. That's how I understand this. It's not just that you're taking in and reverberating, you're also sensing at the same time. That sensitivity grows. Are there people who want to say something, Dan? Or they don't want to talk to us tonight?
Okay. Yeah, that's okay.
That's okay.
Yeah. So those are the tools that are available to us and in our work. So you'll find as you start to progress in this and you mature a little bit, you'll seek ways and means to exercise those new muscles and those new skills. You happen, Kay, you just happen, right? But you notice it as well. So not, and she's saying, and she's saying, and the thing is not to reject. You sense it, and then don't. That's our job as voyagers. That's our job as voyagers. You notice that.
And what I mean by sensing, too, I wanted to say that I feel that the reverberation comes from within, not from without. It's coming within me. And, you know, I can't speak for others, but it's that idea of the Sun Absolute. It's actually coming from there inside, you know, me. But also I just wanted to say that a lot of what my operation now is I just allow when I meet someone, if there's something to be said, I don't think about it. I just, you know, if it's in a work way, I just say it. And I think so much of the times we, and I know myself in the past, would question quickly, well, maybe I shouldn't do this. But I say 10 times out of 10, the experience, it's not for me, it's for the other person. And that's what you have to think about with, also with your, you know, invoking your presence. It's, that's it.
Thank you. Thank you, Kay. Well, there you have it. How you doing over there, Judy?
I'm fine, David.
Good. We're glad. I think we're going to tackle the 936 next week, okay? We'll take a look at how to share that. Because I really appreciate introducing that. But we'll do that next time.
Okay.
Yeah. So, are we okay? Ivan.
Yeah, David, let me just say that you're, I remembered what the Mr. Lee's community, they had the Tavern of Ruin.
That's it.
At night, and the practice was, it didn't matter whether you just ate some dates or you read poetry or you went to sleep, but if you just persisted there,
yeah,
you were getting the vibration.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I remember
that now. Okay, Grant. Tamara's mentioning of the Tai Chi did bring up some memories and of things, and when you're working in Tai Chi and when you're working with Qigong, there's many, many tools that they give you for the sensing to develop it. Many, many. You're supposed to be paying attention to certain postures and parts of your body. But one very nice tool is that the person I'm working with right now said he imagines his energy is a bell that goes around him almost in a bell shape, the solar plexus being kind of the center of that bell. So that it kind of expands the sensing outward from the, you know, just the regular breath. And the second thing that he always, always repeating is, don't impute. And it took me a while to work with that. Allow the energy to flow. Don't impute. Don't overlayer it with your thoughts or whatever. Whatever the word impute may mean. I think it's a wonderful word to keep in mind to not do.
So let's go out this week and ring our bells, okay? And we'll look forward to seeing everybody next Wednesday at 7 o'clock. Thank
and
you.
Sunday night at 6:45.
Good night.
Good night, all.